4,000 National Guardsmen and 700 Marines were ordered to the Los Angeles area following protests over immigration raids. There were lawsuits filed about whether or not the National Guard was appropriately in their state. And with us to discuss this suit and what this means is attorney Gene Rossi. He's in Washington, D.C., law firm of Carlton Fields, where he focuses his practice on white-collar criminal defense and governmental investigations. He has about 3 decades of criminal and civil litigation at the U.S. Department of Justice, where he's tried over 100 federal trials. Welcome to the show, Gene. Thank you so much for joining me, and happy Father's Day to you.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much. Thank you. I got 3 lovely kids, and they're just blessings to me. Thank you so much.
The most important thing in the world, your family. Let's talk about what happened here. So how unusual is it for the National Guard and federal troops to be called into a city where the governor didn't request that sort of relief?
Well, it's not unusual historically. Presidents Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson overruled the governors of Arkansas and Alabama for a major reason, to enforce Supreme Court decisions and statutes regarding civil rights. Eisenhower was opposed by Governor Faubus of Arkansas, and in 1957 he federalized the National Guard because the governor of Arkansas was going to use the National Guard, Karen, to oppose Brown versus Board and to oppose desegregation of the schools. So Eisenhower did it. Kennedy did it, I believe, in 1962 when he federalized the National Guard at the campus of Ole Miss. And then LBJ did it in 1965 when there was the march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. And, of course, the wonderful George Wallace was in no way going to use the National Guard to enforce and protect that march, which was in support of civil rights. So it's been done.
So let's talk, without getting too legal, because it gets really complicated here, Gene, but what laws apply to whether or not a president and federal government can bring in federal forces into a state?
That's a great question. I'm going to make it as simple as possible for your listeners. The president of the United States, even without a statute, has broad authority under the Constitution to enforce the laws of the federal government. So that's the premise number one. But there's a couple of statutes that give President Trump or any president broad discretion and authority to federalize the National Guard and possibly send in the Marines or the armed forces. Here's one statute. It's Title 10, and the president, if he finds that there's a rebellion or an insurrection or there's a situation where the local authorities and the state authorities are not able to protect and enforce federal law, then he has the right to bring in the National Guard. That's Title 10, U.S. Code. Second one is, the big one is, the Insurrection Act. And the Insurrection Act was passed way back in the day, in 1807, and it's been invoked several times. I just mentioned that, a couple examples. But the Insurrection Act says this, Karen, that the President of the United States can send in the National Guard and the Army or Marines or Air Force to enforce federal laws, and they can take over the enforcement of the law enforcement system. That's the Insurrection Act. George H.W. Bush, in May of 1992, invoked the Insurrection Act to allow National Guard and possibly military officials to help quell the riots in L.A. And I got to give you some data on that, Karen. In 1992, the Rodney King revolt, if you will, 60 people died in the riots. There was $1 billion in damage, and there were 12,000 people arrested, all in a few days. So President Bush invoked the Insurrection Act. The two big avenues for the president to invoke his authority.
So, Gene, you know, this, and it makes sense that the federal government needs to enforce its laws. So if they're not being enforced, or someone's, or some people are preventing those laws from being enforced, then the federal government can come in and do that. So in a case, let's just say an example would be a peaceful protest. Like in Chicago, we had a peaceful protest yesterday. I think there was one incident. Otherwise, it was a very orderly First Amendment protest about various things in our federal government. So in that case, is it yes or no? Would the government legally have the authority to bring in the National Guard?
Karen, for your listeners, this is where the rubber meets the road. The statute, Title 10, and also the Insurrection Act, the language is so vague and is so broad and lacks guidelines where the president, if you read the statute correctly, the Insurrection Act and Title 10, President Trump or any president has broad discretion to say, I think there's a rebellion, I think there's an insurrection, I think the locals are not able to enforce the federal laws. There are no guardrails. So that's the problem. And you brought up a good point. I just mentioned the statistics for L.A. in 1992. In L.A., the last few days, they had a protest. Out of 20,000 to 30,000 people, only 5 were arrested. And so out of a city of 4 million people, so it's very hard to conclude that there's a rebellion, there's an insurrection, or the local authorities are not able to enforce the laws. So where does that leave us? It leaves us in a situation, Karen, where on paper, President Trump, if he acts irresponsibly instead of responsibly, can use very broad powers to essentially send in the Marines or federalize the National Guard. The statutes need to be fixed. They need to be more defined, because right now it's not a blank check. But the signature is on a check, the payor is on a check, and you have the date. All you lack is the amount on the check. It's not a blank check, but it's close to it.
Let's take a break here, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what kind of language would be appropriate in such a law, and what are the problems with having the federal government come in to quell these kinds of protests or to exercise their muscle in this case. We're talking to Gene Rossi. He is a partner with the Washington, D.C. firm of Carlton Fields. He has served at the DOJ for many, many years, and he was also a one-time governor for Lieutenant Governor in Virginia, which I'm going to ask him about. Talking Law with Gene Rossi. Gene Rossi is a very seasoned attorney. Seasoned doesn't mean old, Gene. I'm not saying that you're old. He's with the Washington, D.C. firm of Carlton Fields. He practices in white-collar criminal defense, government investigations. He was on the DOJ side for many years, and that's why I have him on, talking about this issue of the National Guardsmen coming to L.A. Now, Gene, there were some court rulings that came down at the end of the week last week. Can you just tell our listeners what the upshot of those decisions actually was?
Okay. What happened was, when President Trump federalized the National Guard and he sent in the National Guard 2,000 soldiers into L.A., Governor Newsom was arguing that under the statute, Title 10, there's language that suggests in the statute that President Trump needs the consent and agreement of the governor of California before he can federalize the National Guard. That was filed. A district court judge, Stephen Breyer's brother, held that Newsom was right. And so a temporary restraining order, injunction, was issued that prevented President Trump from continuing deploying the National Guard. It went immediately up on appeal to the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, and the U.S. Court of Appeals said stop. They stayed the order. So now this Tuesday, 2 days from now, they're going to have a hearing at the U.S. Court of Appeals while the order is stayed. Governor Newsom's victory is essentially on hold. So that's where we are. If that loses for Governor Newsom, or if he loses, this could go to the Supreme Court. And you know what? I hope it goes to the Supreme Court, because it goes back to what we just talked about, Karen. This is an area that has no guardrails. It's a little, you know, blank check, if you will. And we need some guidance from the courts, because it's just not there, in my opinion.
So, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff on social media. I sometimes wonder why I even look at social media. I think we all do. But I've heard this vitriol about people protesting and, you know, they should all be locked up. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned, and I've told my listeners about this, Gene, you know, I've traveled to 52 countries in my life.
Yes.
And where you go and you hear people in Vietnam and you hear people in Russia, you hear people talk to you, and they don't have this freedom, the freedom to protest, the freedom to talk about the government, the freedom to criticize. And they say, yes, we have the freedom to speak, but when we speak, we may not be free. And in fact, we may disappear, and so may our family. So I really want to make sure that people understand that protesting, again, not burning down buildings, you know, not punching police officers, not in favor of that stuff, but the peaceful protest is one of our most dearly held rights. I mean, right?
I'm just going to give you a little vignette, Karen. You know, I'm pro-choice, but I remember this about 5 years ago. I was on a metro in D.C. coming home from work or somewhere, and it was the pro-life rally. And I remember sitting on that metro, and I was surrounded by people that had a different view of me, and I just remember the smiles and the joy and the enthusiasm that they had because they were going to a rally where they could express their views in front of the Supreme Court and the Capitol. And I didn't agree with them, but I felt proud as an American because they were able to do that without any retribution, without any humiliation or hatred. And I was inspired, and I didn't agree with them. And what was great about yesterday is we had differences of opinion, obviously. There were about 2,000, you know, No King rallies. And there was some agitators and people arrested. But at the end of the day, there was nobody killed, a few people arrested, police. Of course, they threw bottles and stuff at police, which they always do. But it was relatively peaceful. And it showed that in our country, unlike any country in the world, the First Amendment and the right to assemble is such a precious commodity, and it actually inspires me.
Yes, as it well should. And anything that serves to put a kibosh on that, like I you know, and I just want to say that, you know, without being political, does sending the National Guard in to a city send the message that we don't want to hear your protest, we don't want to see your protest, we don't want to listen to your point of view? I'm not saying that was the motivation, because I don't know what the motivation was, but I would hate for that to be what happened in any city.
Can I make a comment, though, Karen?
Yes.
That I've been thinking about? The reason that I don't think it was a wise decision to send in the Guard and also the Marines is that I firmly believe that the state police and the LAPD had it under control and that they didn't need any more support. When they sent in the Guard and the Marines, it added a little gas to the fire. And in 1970, on a campus of Kent State in Ohio, they sent in the National Guard, I think, unnecessarily. And what happened was, the Guard, which are not as well trained as other parts of the armed forces, the Guard discharged close to 50 rounds of bullets and killed four people. And the reason is this: their presence at the, you know, it was the anti-Vietnam rallies, their presence there just unnecessarily raised the temperature, and it caused people to be more antagonistic and more vociferous. So that's what I'm worried about with the Marines and the Guard going in to L.A. or any other city that may happen in the next few weeks. That really bothers me.
And let's just, we've got just about a minute left. What do you think the Ninth Circuit, which is the appellate court in California, what do you think they're going to do with the issue of whether or not the government did have the authority to bring in the National Guard here? What do you think?
I think it's a flip, Karen. I think it's a flip of the coin that Trump will win. But if Trump wins or whether he loses, if it goes to the Supreme Court, Trump's going to win. And the reason is this. The president, under the Insurrection Act, under Title X, under a couple of Supreme Court cases from long ago, he's the commander-in-chief. And that court, the Supreme Court especially, shows great deference to the commander-in-chief's view of what is a rebellion, what is an insurrection, and what is hindering the enforcement of laws. So I think if it gets to the Supreme Court, President Trump's going to win.
And we circle back to your point before, which is maybe we need some parameters, some guardrails, and some more specifics
yes.
about when a president can do this going forward. Gene Rossi, thank you so much for joining us on this Father's Day. I hope you go back and celebrate with your wonderful wife and your three children. Gene Rossi is with the Washington, D.C. firm of Carlton Fields. And I hope you come on again because you did such a great job of explaining some complicated things. I appreciate it.
Karen, thank you so much. Thank you. Be safe.